It's Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. The grasslands of southeastern Colorado were free to those willing to settle them in the early 1900s, and thousands of homesteaders took the U.S. government up on that offer. But the homesteading boom went bust in the Depression, and when settlers moved on, they left behind everyday items that reveal the stories of their difficult lives. Historian Abby Christman has been studying these ghost settlements in Otero and Los Animas counties. She's hoping to make the history better known, maybe even draw some tourists. I spoke with Christman from her office at Colorado Preservation, Inc. Abby, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What kinds of things have you discovered that clue you in to how these folks lived?
There's an amazing array of artifacts left on the site, particularly since we aren't doing any kind of excavation work. We're really just looking at what's left on the surface. And we find stoves, bed frames, old toys, dishes, cooking implements. One of the ones that really shows how kind of tough and dry it was out there was we find a lot of barrel hoops, because most of these people were living where they were not within easy access to water. And so having barrels that you could store water in was, you know, one of the most essential things, basically, you know, for surviving. So we do find a lot of barrel hoops on the site.
When you're saying barrel hoops, all the wood has eroded away and it's the metal that's
right,
left.
Right, right. The metal parts are left.
Now, you mentioned toys. Will you just tell me about one of them?
Sure. We found a small toy cap gun.
Okay.
We also found a toy truck.
And I guess it's a sense of, like, time frozen.
Right. And that's really what I get when I, just the sense of, like, kind of sudden abandonment, too, that somebody walked away so quickly that they left their bed and their stove and sometimes automobiles left behind.
And clue us into the history. They left because?
For the most part, they left because it was a very difficult life, and they, you know, couldn't make it. The land out there is fairly arid. A lot of these people came out without a lot of knowledge of what they were really getting into, not realizing how tough conditions were, not really being equipped for, you know, quite how hard it was going to be. And many people only lasted a few years. And some came in the teens and 20s and left soon after. Some made it into the 30s. And then in the 30s, with the Depression and the Dust Bowl and the, you know, real both, you know, kind of agricultural and environmental crisis, a lot of them had to abandon their land in the 30s then.
And we should be clear that these weren't by any means opulent homes they were living in. In fact, many were dugouts. I mean, essentially digging a hole and putting a kind of roof and superstructure around it.
Right. A lot of times all we find left of a homestead is pretty much a hole in the ground with some collapsed wood beams and maybe a little bit of roofing left. And it was a thing that really struck me. Living in Denver and living in a neighborhood with a lot of 1920s bungalows, and I live in a 1920s apartment building, and, you know, that kind of was my conception of the 1920s, and just really being faced with just how different life was in the 1920s in Southeast Colorado for somebody living in a dugout.
Well, and I think that raises the question of why they would have been in that area in the first place. I mean, you know, in the 19-teens and 20s, cities had electricity, cars. Why go to this place where life was so hard?
Well, I mean, the main reason was free land. It was still open under the Homesteading Act. And because this was, many, you know, considered pretty marginal land, it was some of the last land to be homesteaded.
Oh.
And so if you still had that dream of, you know, being able to be your own landowner, and you wanted, you know, that still kind of lasting dream of westward expansion, move west, get your own homestead, you know, this was where there was still free land available. If you could go out, last for 5 years, build a house, show improvement, show that you were either farming or ranching the land, then it was yours.
Now, were there ways that people tried to improve the land to make it more productive? Do you see any signs of kind of ingenious ways of making it less brutal out there.
We have seen a lot of ingenious ways. Some were more large scale ways. There were areas where a lot of homesteaders would get together and try to do large scale irrigation projects. Unfortunately, despite the fact that it's often very dry out there, when it does rain, it can be flood levels. And we looked at one dam project on the Apishapa that was a huge dam with major diversion structures constructed, took many years to build, and was only in use for a year or two before a big flood came through and wiped it out.
Wow.
We've also seen much smaller scale ingenuity. One homestead that we looked at, the homestead was located next to a small canyon with water running through it, and the homesteader managed to make his own little concrete dam and to block up the little canyon and ran a pipe structure all the way through the canyon to his homestead so that he could have piped water to his homestead.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
Yes, definitely a lot of work.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and historian Abby Christman is with us. And she's talking to us about what's left over from the homesteading settlements in the early part of the 1900s in southeastern Colorado. And so where did folks come from who were interested in homesteading?
Well, in the earlier period of homesteading, a lot, homesteading in the area started in the 1860s. And at that point, a lot of them were coming up from New Mexico. Some were also coming out from the East Coast. Then you get into the 20s, and a lot of the then were coming from the surrounding states. So a lot from the plain states, coming from Texas or Oklahoma or, Missouri, kind of, coming out. But really, you got homesteaders from all over.
Is there any sense for how many people were in that area at the height of the homestead boom?
Well, more like if you look at the population numbers in kind of 1920, which is really kind of the height of population out there, Los Angeles County, which is one of the main areas we've been looking at, had a population of almost 39,000. And if you compare that today, population census as of 2000 was 15,000 people for the county.
Wow.
So more than double the number of people that are currently living in the county.
And this is obviously far away from big cities and towns. Was there much of a social life among these homesteaders?
There was. I've had the fortunate opportunity to be able to speak to some of the old timers who, can tell me stories of homesteading. And they were very isolated. A lot of them, because of the distances, only got into town, which is typically either La Junta or Trinidad, a couple times a year. But the local kind of one-room schoolhouses really formed kind of the basis of a community. And I've heard lots of stories of, weekend dances and church meetings and suppers and, everything going on at the schools, because you really were spread out and you made that effort to come and, be able to meet with other people and have that social life. And also a social life that went on through work. You relied on your neighbors to come help you with Roundup or branding or other, kind of agricultural and ranching activities throughout the year.
So are there families there today that lay claim to their land because their ancestors homesteaded?
There are. There are still. And really what happened when people started abandoning the land, those who just couldn't make it or had to leave during the 1930s, there were some of the ones left who were doing well enough that they could kind of buy out their neighbors as they wanted to leave. And so a lot of the ranches that are left today still date from that period, and the families go back those many generations, and they're the ones who kind of hung on and now wind up having large ranches that are composed of what, used to be many homesteads.
So there's a double-edged sword to doing this interview with us. You talk about all of these incredible artifacts that are just still there. I imagine as a historian, you want to document that, preserve it, but you'd also like to get some eyeballs on it without necessarily compromising it. So what's the next step here? How do you get more people aware of this history? How do you bring them into the area but not, ruin the deal?
It's a difficult challenge, particularly because most most of the homesteads we're looking at are all on private land, and obviously, and pretty difficult to get to. I really have learned things that a four-wheel drive vehicle can do that I didn't know before trying to get out to some of these sites. So definitely not, you know, a place you can really get people to, but we're really trying through photographs. We are starting a new section of our website that's going to be sharing a lot of the images of what we're documenting. We're also looking for, currently applying for grants for future funding. We're hoping to be able to do a publication, and we're also hoping to be able to develop some driving tours and podcasts for people going through the area so that when they drive through, they're not just seeing, wow, look at this big open space of nothing, and that they're instead they're really seeing that the history and the heritage and the working landscape and, you know, seeing that whole homesteading period and how it, you know, has kind of evolved into what's there today.
Well, Abby, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Abby Christman is survey coordinator for Colorado Preservation, Inc. She talked to us about old homesteads in southeastern Colorado.